Thank you, John, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us for Peyto's first quarter 2011 results conference call. With me in the room today, we've got Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, our CFO, Kathy Turgeon, our VP of Exploration, Dave Thomas, and our Investor Awareness Rep, Jim Grant. Jim, I see you've got a big list of questions there, so why don't I turn it over to those?
Okay. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. Darren, our first quarter financial results are just out, and while we certainly have seen some erosion in commodity price that has been more than offset by our increased productions, how are our plans for this year holding up in light of the current commodity prices? Are our plans still justified by the expected returns on capital employed at these prices?
Well, thanks, Jim. I think right now things at Peyto are just going along fantastic. I realize that that surprises some people because we are a gas producer, and everyone's aware how the low gas price is hurting a lot of the industry, especially a lot of the dry gas industry. The reality is, this is exactly the environment in which Peyto shines. We are the low-cost producer. We have the advantage, so we can be aggressive when others have to be careful and when others aren't being aggressive. We still make a decent netback at these prices. We're still generating strong cash flow. We're still able to afford and fund a large capital program, and I think the production gains are demonstrating the impact of that capital. As for the returns we're generating, we're constantly monitoring those. For every well we drill, every dollar we spend, we're looking at those rates of return, and we're still seeing very good returns in the 30%-50% range for full-cycle well economics. Those are very good returns, and that means for investors, we're generating a return on capital, return on equity, somewhere in the teens, which should continue, and in fact, likely rise into the future as cash flow grows and earnings grow. I think right now we're in our element. We're delivering exciting growth at the bottom of the cycle, and it's funny because I think it would be a big mistake for investors to just sort of brush us off as a gas producer just because gas is out of favor. We're a very profitable energy company right now.
Okay. Now, I'd like to direct a question to Scott Robinson, our Chief Operations Officer. Scott, given the dramatic growth in production reported in this report, can you tell us where production stands right now, as well how much of our production is from our new 2011 well additions?
Yeah, sure, Jim. The quarterly numbers are there in the report. We've been able to enjoy significant momentum in our production growth, and that's carried on through to present. Right here at the end of April or early May, we're at the 35,000 barrel mark. Those that are interested can refer to Darren's monthly reports on our website, where you can see how the production has grown monthly through January, February, and March. We're at 35,000 now, and of that 35, 10 of that has been generated from wells that we brought on stream in 2011. 22 new wells have run on stream, and at that 10,000 barrel addition, that's about 450 barrels a day for each of those new added wells.
Okay. Scott, how do our wells in 2011 compare to those we drilled and brought on stream in 2010?
Yeah. The quick answer would be that they're very comparable. Certainly haven't seen any kind of deterioration in the results that we're getting, and that's very important. For a given species, be it our Wilrich wells or our Cardium or Notikewin or Falher, we're getting very repeatable results on a cost basis. We're starting to experience some drill time reductions here recently, and we'll have to stay tuned to see if these translate into reduced costs. We're hopeful they will, but there's still some uncertainty on where service costs are headed here as we come out of breakup. An interesting comparison can be made between our 2011 wells and our 2010 wells. If you recall last year, which was our first year of predominantly horizontal, we brought on 45 wells, 45 net wells, cost us 260 million dollars, and we got, as of the end of the year, 15,000 barrels from that. Up to breakup, we've basically done half of that program, 22 wells, 130 million to the end of April on capital spent, and we've got this 10,000 barrels a day out of it thus far. Those comparisons show that there certainly hasn't been any kind of deterioration in the program.
Mm-hmm. Year over year, our liquids to gas ratio has dropped from about 32 barrels per million cubic feet to about 22 barrels per million cubic feet. While it looks like we are developing more dry gas than liquids-rich gas, most companies in the industry are moving away from dry gas. Our own corporate presentation shows that the liquid-rich Cardium generates higher netbacks. Well, why are we not developing more liquids right now?
A very valid question, and it contains many parts to it here. We are developing liquids, and I'll discuss that here. As we know, our business is about making profit and return, and Darren alluded to that. Although our Wilrich wells and Notikewins produce a drier gas, they're in the 10 barrel per million range. What they lack in liquids and in netback is more than compensated for in their rate performance. Consequently, based on an ongoing postmortem of these well types, we're seeing superior rates of return from these wells because of that high production rate. But the liquid-rich Cardiums that are a meaningful part of our program are very close in rate of return, and we'll see that they'll continue to be a very big part. During 2010, we spent a lot of our time focusing on testing some of these drier types of formations, and consequently we saw, as you alluded, from the first to the fourth quarter of last year, our liquid rate was held more or less flat at about 3,300 to 3,400 barrels, while we grew our gas from 100 to 150 million cubic feet a day, and hence that decline in the liquid ratio. However, over the first quarter of this year, we brought more liquids-rich gas back into the content. A third of our wells were Cardium, and if you look at the quarter-over-quarter production changes, our liquids has grown from that 3,400 up to 3,700, and it translates into an average liquid content in the quarter of 22 barrels per million. So we've brought our liquid content back up, reflecting a balance of Cardiums and some of the drier gas wells. So it's a long, complicated answer, but the important thing is we're focusing on making money, and these drier wells are making us an excellent return as the numbers manifested in the numbers.
Right. Turning to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration. With our first horizontal well in the Kiskew area in South Kakwa drilled and completed in the first quarter of 2011, I know it's pretty early to talk about our expectations from this well, but what sort of indicators have we seen? How did it compare in drilling and completion costs with the Cardium wells in the greater Sundance area? And how does it compare in initial productive capability and liquids content?
Well, we were pleased to see the results of our first Cardium horizontal well up at Kiskew in Township 58, Range 3 West 6 Jim. It drilled fast, and the seven-stage completion went smoothly. The drill and complete costs came in at a combined $4.9 million, which is slightly lower than the $5 million average drill and complete costs of our first 14 Cardium horizontal wells at Sundance. That was a pleasant surprise, as Kiskew is typically 300 to 400 meters deeper than drilling at Sundance. The next good news was the gas rate. The Sundance Cardium horizontal wells average initial rates are about 2.5 million cubic feet per day, but the northern Kiskew well was brought on stream at a restricted rate of 5 million a day after testing at 10 million cubic feet per day. Initial liquids content was also good at 60 barrels per million from the Kiskew well versus 45 barrels per million cubic feet from the Sundance wells. In summary, the wells have been encouraging enough for us to plan for an additional six Cardium horizontal wells to be drilled in our northern areas of Kiskew and Chime during the second half of 2011. So we'll be moving up a rig to the northern area to start that program in late June, and the gas will go to Peyto's Kakwa gas plant.
Okay. So, Dave, can you compare the new Fuller wells that we've drilled in the first quarter of 2011 with the first two we drilled in 2010? How do they compare with the Notikewin and Wilrich horizontals?
Jim, the results from our upper and middle Fuller horizontal wells continue to impress us. We drilled our first two wells in 2010 and drilled and completed another three wells in the first quarter of 2011. We're finding that the Fuller wells have gas production rates quite similar to many of our Wilrich and Notikewin wells. but that there actually are least expensive wells to drill and complete. In 2010, we drilled the two Polaire wells, and they finished their first month of production at an average rate of about 3.5 million cubic feet per day, and cost an average of just $4 million to drill and complete. The first three Polaire wells drilled in 2011 finished their first month of production at a very similar average rate of 3.6 million cubic feet per day, and cost a very similar average of $4.3 million to drill and complete. The liquids content is averaging about 15 barrels per million cubic feet, which is better than our Wilrich and Notikewin wells. And we have just enough data to project that our first 2010 Polaire well will pay out in just about 1.3 years. So these are encouraging results and are meaningful to Peyto because we've identified over 100 upper and middle Polaire locations on our land.
Oh, that's great. Turning to Kathy Turge, our Chief Financial Officer. Kathy, we've now released our first quarterly results with new international financial reporting standards. What impact is this having on the results we are reporting?
IFRS does have some impact on the way we calculate some non-cash items, specifically depletion and depreciation, decommissioning liability, which we formerly called asset retirement obligation, and future market-based bonus. The result has been that DD&A expense is slightly lower than it would have been under old Canadian GAAP. The calculation of the future market-based bonus can result in some different timing of expense recognition, with some small changes in those timing, but ultimately it doesn't affect the amount of the bonus actually paid. So over time there's no impact on earnings. So overall the impact on earnings is not significant, and there's no impact on funds from operations. And if you would like more information on the IFRS transition and its impact on the 2010 comparative results, which were previously reported under old Canadian GAAP and have now been restated to IFRS, you can see lots of detail in note 19 of the financial statement.
Okay, thank you. And turning back to Scott. Scott, can you describe what we've done to expand our production plant and pipeline infrastructure so far this year?
Okay, Jim. We've got a few things in progress right now, but the things that have been completed are really compression addition and compression modification, which has given us about 30 million a day of increased capacity to what we came into the year with. So 30 million a day, that's 5,000 barrels a day. That's allowed us to undertake the growth that we have undertaken. So it's been a nice hit to the results that we've achieved. We have in progress two other projects which will add additional volumes. At Wildhay, we're finishing off installation of a refrigeration and some additional compression. And that's going to give us another 3,000 barrels a day as of shortly here, early June. In addition to that, we're doing some expansions, installing a new refrigeration and some compression at Nose Hill. That'll also give us about 30 million a day or 5,000 barrels. So what's immediately in front of us is 8,000 barrels a day of capacity expansion. Further to that, the Nose Hill changes that we're making will allow us to drop in three more compressors when we need them to add another 30 million or 5,000 barrels a day. So kind of in summary, we've accomplished 5,000 of expansion thus far. We've got 8,000 between now and August, and we can bring in another 5,000 whenever we need it thereafter. So we're set up nicely for the growth that lies ahead of us.
Okay. Have we seen any impacts yet of the spring breakup that seems to have been a little late this year? How is this impacting our operations and those infrastructure plans that we've talked about for the rest of the year?
Breakup did come late this year. I don't know how significant it was. Certainly not as bad as the past years in our area. Road bans are in place, but we've been able to get around those to a certain degree. Many of our competitors, I know, shut down their operations in early April or the end of March in anticipation of breakup. But it was our objective to undertake as much activity as we could through that restricted access period. But but without taking on additional costs, dragging up our costs. We planned a bunch of drilling off of common well sites or very close adjacent well sites. And we also put in place the necessary provision with road owners to allow us to keep a minimal amount of movement going on during the period. And consequently, we kept five of our six rigs busy right up until fairly recently here. We did drop a rig, which has brought us back to four rigs. The one idle rig through breakup is about to fire up again here before the end of the month, which will put us back at five active rigs, and we'll come out of breakup with those five rigs. So it's been a very productive period for us, despite there are some challenges out there. The one thing that we've done here about a week and a half ago was we terminated or stopped our completions. So we're building an inventory of wells that will be completion ready, and we'll have five quick completions to be done in early June to add into our growing production.
Okay, and back to you, Darren, for the last question, me, before we turn it over to the callers. What do you see as the most significant differences in our activities now and in the first quarter of this year compared to the same time last year?
Jim, I think, you know, this time last year, I mean, we were firing along, but it seemed like a lot of the industry was still pretty quiet. You know, I can recall we were being very successful at land sales at, you know, very opportunistic prices. There wasn't a lot of news coming out in terms of, you know, horizontal well activity in the Deep Basin. Right now, it seems like things are heating up a little bit. To me, anyway, we're seeing much more competition at land sales. We're seeing definitely more competition for services in the industry, especially from the oil side of the business. And I think we're starting to see material costs that are going to start rising. You know, China's economy is still firing, looking for metals. Rebuilding of Japan is no question going to, you know, drive up the cost of materials, I think, as we go forward. So probably today, more than this time last year, we have to keep a very careful watch on our cost structure. But at the same time, I think this year, as we go around, we're more confident in our opportunities than we were last year. We've got another year of production history on a lot of our horizontal wells, our older ones, and we see those decline curves performing as we would expect. We've got another year of experience drilling and completing these wells, so we're getting more efficient at them. Drill times are reducing, as Scott had mentioned. We've got more knowledge today about the technology and the fact you know, we've tried it in, right across our entire asset base, and we've tried it now in a bunch of different zones. And, you know, we know where it's not met our expectations, and we know where really it's blown away our expectations. So, you know, I think right now we're more excited about the potential that we have in our land base than we were last year by a long shot. You know, and I think perhaps to a lot of investors it might come as a surprise that we're more sustainable today. I think as we go forward, you know, in our growth, when we look at our corporate decline rates that we're going to have to be offsetting next year, they're actually less than, or we think they're going to be less than what they were this year. So really, you know, it's getting easier for us to grow as we move forward into the future. I'd have to say that everybody involved with PETA right now, from our field staff to our office staff to our shareholders, you know, everybody is very excited about what's going on. We've had tremendous growth this year that we've managed to accomplish in a very short period of time. And, you know, the future growth that we think we can deliver is pretty spectacular, too. So everyone around and involved with PETA is ecstatic with where we've come from and really excited about where we're about to go. So the greatest thing, I think, and the most satisfying part of all that is that this is profitable growth. This isn't just, you know, production growth for the sake of making it go up. We're generating good return with this growth. So that's a very unique thing right now in the industry.
Okay. So at this point, John, I'd like to turn this call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. So if you could open the call up to other questions.
The first question is from Rob Belinsky of Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. I was hoping maybe you could provide a little insight on why operating costs moved up on a unit of production basis compared to the last quarter of 2010?
Sure, Rob. This is Scott Robinson here. As you're aware, there's a seasonal fluctuation to our operating costs. We stock up on some methanol in the turn of the calendar there. So it's more or less just a seasonal change with chemical costs making up some of that change. You can look at the quarter to first quarter to first quarter of last year, and we actually did make some gains on a you know on the seasonal common quarter basis.
Okay, great. And then my second question is, what is the target base decline rate that you're targeting as you continue to integrate new horizontal wells to your portfolio?
Rob, we look at what the independent engineering firms have predicted, and obviously their forecast of wells productivity is cemented firmly in the expectation of reserve recovery and the type of reservoir that we're producing from. They had predicted that this year we would be offsetting about a 34% base decline. So when you added up all of the wells that we had on production at December 31st of last year and said, what's that group going to decline like over the year, what's it going to be? And so they said it would drop about 34%. Now, it's not a linear decline. As you're probably aware, we produce from these tight gas reservoirs, and so we've in the past characterized our production decline as more of a harmonic or super harmonic type profile. So it's a decline that's steeper in the early time and shallower in the later time, and that's consistent even from one year to the next. So as much as we might experience a 34% decline over the entire year, it might be 40-some-odd percent in the first month, and it might be 20-some-odd percent in the last month. So to average that 34% over the year. And then as we move into next year, if we look at what the independent engineers have forecast, that same wedge of production to decline in 2012, they were predicting about a 16% aggregate decline. And so then we say, well, if we add to that 16% all of the new production that we're building this year, what's it going to decline at? And we take an estimate or a guess that it would be about 50% like they predicted for the 2010 wedge, then we would have a base decline of about 32% if we add about a similar type volume for the same capital as we did last year. So that's where we come to the conclusion that, gee, our actual base decline corporately that we're offsetting is starting to drop over time. And I wrote a little monthly report on that this month that's on our website if you'd care to read it, and it sort of goes into that explanation of base decline.
I actually did read it, enjoyed it. I was wondering more, let's say 5 years out, what you think it might be.
Well, you know, it's tough because we'd have to project not only capital spending, but we'd have to project capital efficiency as well. You know, if we make some assumptions, obviously, on a modestly growing capital program, and we make some assumptions that our capital efficiencies stay reasonably close to where we have them today, then what I think we'll find is we will see the corporate decline will continue to drift downwards, much like it did in the early days of Peyto when we were growing our capital program and growing our production still quite handsomely during, you know, we had probably a five-year run there, and every year we saw the base decline coming down by 1 or 2%. So I think it's reasonable to expect that we're producing from all the same reservoirs that we were producing from back then. They have the same reservoir characteristics. So it's very reasonable to expect that we'll see that same kind of thing. Now, if we lose capital efficiency, if we see service costs going through the roof, if we pull back our capital program, for instance, then obviously that will change, and we'll see perhaps a more dramatic change in our corporate decline. Likely what will happen is if we pull back our capital program, for instance, our corporate decline would drop much faster, just like it did in, you know, 2007 and 2008. We saw our corporate decline drop from 30% or so right down to 20, 22%. So that's the great thing about this asset base, and the great thing about tight gas is that you're producing from very low permeability reservoirs that ultimately, you know, the gas tends to bleed out of the ground when you get out into the, you know, 10 to 15 year mark on a lot of these reservoirs, and it's very low decline. It's a huge resource, and we just can't get it out faster, so we're left with Mother Nature's, how much she's willing to give up at any given time. So it's interesting because from my perspective, I've never seen a company as pure tight gas as Peyto. And we've never seen a company try to grow completely through the drill bit on tight gas like Peyto has. And so I think we're breaking a lot of the traditional molds when it comes to sustainable growth that
has not been achievable by a lot of different portfolios of assets.
Great. That's terrific. Thanks, guys. Great quarter.
You bet, Rob.
The next question is from Jim Byrne of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Just a couple of quick questions. The you mentioned the 7 net sections you added in the quarter. Just curious, how many locations might be associated with that, you know, where those lands are located. And second part, your prepared remarks there, questions about the Flare and 100 upper and middle locations. Just wondering, of those 100, slide deck before kind of said 72 locations, how many are, is that incremental to those 72? So if any more color on that, it'd be great.
Sure, maybe I'll just make a comment on the land and even Dave can add some more color on the locations. You know, the 7 sections, obviously, we're strategically acquiring land in and around our core area. They're definitely in the deep basin, I can tell you that much. And as much as we bought land last year with a strategy to ensure that we could convert it quickly, the same goes with the lands that we're buying now. We're looking at where we've got an infrastructure component, where we've got a knowledge base that we can apply to those lands, where we've been able to evaluate locations and the potential on those lands. We really go into the land sale with the knowledge that we have drilling locations on that prospective acreage. And then we're attempting, obviously, to be very opportunistic, too, and get it for as cheap as we can get it. We have a lot of inventory, too, so it's hard to justify paying up a lot for new inventory when we've got already so much in our pocket, but we do have to obviously address our future. So, typically we're seeing somewhere between 2 and 3 locations per section. So if, we wanted to extrapolate on the 7 sections of land that we bought, if I can recall correctly, all of it was new area that we, obviously didn't already have production in and production didn't already exist in. So some of the land that we acquired from a partner already had some new production, but the 7 new crown sections are all virgin in terms of their development potential.
Darren, I'd just like to add, usually on brand new land purchases, we purchase the vast majority of our new lands under a broker, and in new plays, we like to just keep that information confidential until such time as any additional lands which may be available either through crown land sales or through farm ends on offsetting land owners until that process has finished and the lands are tied up or tested by us to our satisfaction. So we don't usually comment in great detail about those kinds of very recent land purchases. The second question regarding the Fuller additional locations, maybe new locations, which or in addition to earlier numbers, what we see with the Flare is the more we drill, the more confidence we get. We're getting very good results there, and we're constantly reappraising what our opportunities are, and that's the zone that initially there was very little information in the vertical well bores, and we've been getting more and more confident with each horizontal well that we drill. So I think you may see that the numbers of horizontals in that formation to grow beyond what I've already mentioned.
Jim, as you know, Flare is obviously a big play as you go further north in the Deep Basin and up into that sort of Wapiti-Go Creek area. Down in the Sundance area where we've got most of our core land base, we tried Flares in the past in vertical wells. Very few had large enough sustainable rates that they would stand out on their own, a little bit like the Wilrich that way, where we couldn't justify drilling vertical wells for just the Flare alone. And we just didn't have a lot of tests of it. So, unlike the Cardium and the Nauticuan, where we had a lot of vertical results that we could look at and compare to with the horizontal results, and maybe we could be a little more confident with the horizontal wells right off the get-go, the Flare and the Wilrich have been ones where we really needed to see the results slowly evolve over time, and then we start to get confidence in them. And when we do, well, you've seen the results. I mean, when we've got confidence in the Wilrich, we're not holding back at all in the development of that. So I think the more we gain confidence in the Flare, the more opportunities begin to emerge, and the more exciting they become, and the more aggressive we start to harvest them.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
I would now like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. G. Please go ahead.
Well, thanks everybody for listening in. I realize this is a very busy week with earnings results coming out and a lot of people reporting news, and I'm sure there's a lot of competing conference calls as well. So thanks for listening in on our Q1, and we're excited about the rest of this year. We're breakup doesn't seem to be slowing us down very much, so when we come back to you in mid-August with Q2, we should have some more exciting news to report. In the meantime, stay tuned and hit our website for all the latest and greatest on Payto. Thanks for tuning in.